August 12th, 2015. It's a Watt from Pedro's show. Pedro Show. Brother Matt, how are you?
Yeah, everything's good.
We're at the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point.
Bitching summer day.
Good folks at SiteWorks are telling me they are redesigning our page.
Oh, yeah? Cool.
Yeah, remember those shots we took?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Building the new TWFPS.
Sweet.
.com site.
Bitching.
Started off with Like Sonny, also known as Simple Like, John Coltrane. And then our guest today.
Yeah.
Pipatika.
Welcome.
How you doing?
Monsters on Vacation. Brand new stuff. Sunrise at Sunset. I thought Sunrise would be good to start off the show. Brother Matt, you go back with Pete here.
Yeah, way back. About 1974-ish or something. Yeah. P.E. at Dana, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And Pete's laid down the soundtrack for decades worth of Pedro party music and lots of cool times.
All right. Speaking of music, Pete, what's your oldest musical memory?
Oh, let's see. The first record I ever got was, Deep Purple, Made in Japan. I think me and my brother saved our lunch money and bought it. And I remember, you know, having the tennis racket. I was that kid jumping off the couch and you know, setting up pillows on the couch and pretending to play that record. So probably that. You know, probably like 10 or 12 years old. Something
vinyl
like that.
Record?
Yeah, vinyl record.
Where,
yeah.
Here in Pedro?
Yeah, here in Pedro.
Well, it must have been Redwood or
Redwood.
Chuck Sound of Music.
Or, I think down at like, what was it? There was a drugstore down at like Newberry's?
Jesse's? Newberry's on
Newberry's,
Pacific.
I think that was okay. It down there on Pacific.
Yeah, happened. Yeah, people they used to sell records at a drugstores. I think that's how Tower started up in Sacktown. Dude had a section of his pops. Drugstore
right.
Selling records.
I mean, that's it's ways back, but that's how I remember it going down. Yeah.
Okay, you don't remember like radio, your mom,
oh
and
yeah,
pop playing records.
Sure, mom and my mom.
I mean, why did you pick that Deep Purple one?
Oh, you know, I don't know. That just came to mind at first, but you're right. I mean, my mom had she was really into Elvis, and she loved that. And I remember my dad just you know how could you love that drug infested guy? My dad was an old school Slav guy, you know, World War II type, and he had no love for that.
Elvis.
He didn't like Elvis. Another one of his greatest quotes.
Competition.
Yeah, that was probably it as well. And then, yeah, there was the Beatles ruined all of America with their long hair and their hippiness and their mustaches and their LSD. And he had no love for that style of music. You know, if it wasn't old school Croatian music, he had no love for it.
Take some early tambourine lessons?
No, you know, self taught, but, you know, they did force my brother to take accordion.
Yeah, yeah, oh, pizza. Yeah.
And
hey,
that,
by the way, Brother Matt, pizza joined us.
What's up, Pete?
Hey,
Pete and Repeat.
Seat club in the house.
And a very recent connection. The music we just heard, Sunrise at Sunset. Was recorded at Casa Hanzo by Pete Mason.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, very excellent engineer.
And only a couple months ago, right?
It was very first band on when we did the upgrade to 10.
Oh, yeah, the HD rig.
Yeah.
We got the Hanzo, all that stuff. Casa Hanzo, so you buy a record. When did you get in guitar? When did you trade the tennis racket for a guitar?
Oh, yeah, that gets back to the accordion. Like I said, my mom and dad had forced my brother to, you know, buy an accordion, take these lessons, and he hated that, of course. So he went out and bought, like, an acoustic classical guitar, and it was left in the bedroom. Well, so while he's off taking these accordion lessons, I'm sitting there strumming away and then not knowing how to tune a guitar or anything. I think I eventually tuned it to, like, just a straight bar or an open G or something. It was able to kind of make a couple notes out of that, you know.
So he didn't show you. How did he learn?
Oh no, he didn't know nothing.
It was like what bedroom decoration.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I was able to take it and okay, you know start more. Making a few things out of it. Yeah.
Happened. Do you remember the first song you learned? Was it original, or did you copy a record?
Yeah, probably copying a record. You know, back then it was, you know, what was on the radio. Like I said, whether it be the Rolling Stones or Deep Purple, like I said, was big in my book back then, you know.
Do you remember?
Yeah, probably Smoke on the Water, like every other little kid, you know. That's probably your first little riff you learn. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I think they learned it from the Stooges.
Yeah, they probably did.
He put in that little bit at the end.
Yeah, probably did.
Bum, 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 bum. I mean, it's fucking
loose. So typical, you know, it's perfect. Yeah, I think my son, when I was trying to teach him, that was one of the first things he picked up, too, you know. Something about that riff, just, you know, it's pretty iconic, and it's easy to pick up. It's
DNA.
It's DNA, yeah.
I think it's G. Remember the bass? It would trip me out because the bass is just pumping on a G.
Right, right. Uh-huh.
Yeah, trippy. It was a live single on AM radio. They cut it all up. I remember it. You know, Made in Japan.
Yeah,
it was going to be a promo album. It turned out to be really big for them. But one of the guys lives on the hill. No, later, Glenn Hughes.
Glenn Hughes, yeah. I heard he's here in town.
I heard he's on the hill. When they got the low voice guy. Because Deep Purple always needed a screamer.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah. So they got Hughes from, he was in Trapeze or something.
Hughes right. Thrall.
In fact, I saw that. Huh?
Hughes Thrall Band, I think it was. Well, that was one of the
Trapeze.
He was in.
Yeah, he was in Trapeze. And then he had the other guy was Whitesnake later.
Yeah, Coverdale.
David Coverdale,
yeah.
Kind of like Paul Rogers. Anyway, so you're copying songs. Do you remember the first song you wrote? When did you get electric guitar?
Oh, electric guitar.
And what was with the swerve to the surf? Hard rock from England.
Yeah, where that came from, I don't even know. At first guitar, my mom, you know, I was sandpapering her down, trying to get her to buy me a real electric guitar. And I think we scraped up $50, and it was kind of like a Les Paul Burst, some like cheap Japanese model, I remember. Like a butterfly inlay in the headstock, but yeah, it had a terrible sound. It was really distorted.
Did you get an amp too?
Yeah, I was running a beautiful Yamaha with torn up speakers, and ironically, it had no reverb in the amplifier, my first amp, so go figure on that. So maybe it was the lack of reverb. So when I finally did get a Fender Twin with reverb, I go, oh wow, this is cool, turn this up, you know. But yeah, we played in the first dial tones. And Tone Deaf and the Mutes, you remember in high school with, what was that, Rich and Rob and them?
I'm going to get to that, but let's play some music.
All right,
this is called Pure Juice, Monsters on Vacation.
Well, he can't don't want him, but I don't want him to be riding these girls, to be riding these girls around. Well, I'm gonna steal me a pistol, shoot my chauffeur down. Well, I'm gonna buy him, well, I'm gonna buy him a brand new V8, a brand new V8 Ford. Well, he won't need no passengers, I will be his load.
Another reason I like my phone is because it brings salesmen to me, or as I call it, the inbound prank call, where some lucky salesman gets me on the phone to rattle off some droll, monotone pitch about windshield replacement or the timeshare demonstration of a lifetime. Once I get to the end, I'll say, "You know, that sounds pretty good. I'm probably going to buy it, but could you just do that pitch from the top?" And they're kind of annoyed because they don't want to do it again, but I also told them I'm going to buy it, so they kind of have to. That's part of the deal. So they take it from the top and go through their whole presentation again. And once it gets to the end, I'll say, "Gosh, you know, I'm gonna come clean with you. I was, while you were talking, I was watching Everybody Loves Raymond with the mute on, and a couple things I just wasn't paying attention. But if you could just take it one more time from the top, I'm 99% sold on this thing. I got my card in my hand. If I could just hear it one more time." And at this point, they're annoyed. They just want the sale. They've gone through the pitch twice. They offer to go back to the part you may have missed. Like, "Is there anything you just missed, or is there anything I could just go over?" No, I pretty much need to hear it from the top. And then write it up. I'm sold. So they do begrudgingly do it one more time, knowing that that's what they've got to do for the sale. And finally they get to the end, fatigue wearing in their voice, eager to get off the phone with me after 45 minutes, knowing that gratification is just seconds away as I say, "Now do it again. I'm about to come." And the guy never called me back.
Pure Juice, Monsters on Vacation. What's that about?
Oh, Pure Juice, kind of a nod to... kind of a nod to Tom Sims. We did a soundtrack for one of his very first snowboarding movies, and he was kind of a legend, kind of a guy that kind of created the whole thing. He got, you know, made his own boards, and he was a great skateboarder back in the day. He created the Pure Juice skateboard wheel. And so
it's in his honor.
Yeah, it's in his honor, yeah. And that's, he passed great. Away a few years ago, too, now.
Jay Adams, too,
right? Yeah. I had the opportunity.
That guy lived rough.
Yeah.
I think he had a heart attack in Mexico.
Yeah, he was in Mexico surfing with, I think, Bono, a local surfer here from Pedro. And, he had a heart attack in his sleep. And
That classic skateboard movie that was from Pedro, Skater Dater or something.
Skater
like that.
Dater, just, yeah. Good memory, yeah.
50th anniversary or something like
oh,
that.
Oh, I'd love to see that again, yeah.
I guess on YouTube.
Oh, I gotta check it out.
Tab Falco after that, me and my chauffeur blues. Barron's Whitfield, the Savage is brand new. I'm a good man. Kyoka with retarded apples. Retarded. Gold Sky, brand new from many birthdays. Solanke, from the Leeds Band, from Names and Pack Drills. Poonie 90 instrumental from Mr. Tom and Tobacco. Here's a Czech band that we played with a couple months ago. Did a tour with called Užme Doma and Kožernik. My Slavic too good.
Yeah, that's right.
And here's another one, Melodojka Uni, Ajuo Mari.
Yeah. Yeah. Czech is different.
No, these dudes ain't.
There's
Malatrojka you need is a...
Yeah, Malatrojka.
Huh?
Malatrojka.
Okay, maybe my pronounce is bad, okay, so... And then Atisani, 17, from Milovoja Mika Markovic Jazz Band. That's from...
There you go.
Nostalgia.
Dobro, dobro, Mario, dobro.
Well, this is a bunch of little music they made for TV, like kind of crime show. They had in the 70s there.
Oh, wow.
So same thing, like, remember 70s Tom Scott, you know, when you saw, like, Beretta or something and that kind of music?
Uh-huh.
They had their own version of that.
Oh, wow, yeah, right on.
Because, you know, those cats could travel. Mm-hmm. So they saw a little more. It was a little more porous. And then Bodega's brand new, Mouse, young guys from here in SoCal. Bob Schreiner with Sales. And finally, Psycho Surf. Monsters on Vacation. What's that with Psycho Surf?
Okay, Psycho Surf. We did a movie called Psycho Skate. And
so it's like that, but surf.
Yeah, I just kind of did another version, another take on it. And, yeah, I just gave it that surf vibe. But there again, yeah, during the 80s, did a lot of, like, soundtracks for surf movies and skateboarding movies and such, yeah.
So, and you wouldn't. So these are like Pride from the Vaults.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the fucking Casa Hanzo.
Right.
So let's go back to this fucking acoustic guitar, then the import, right? Econo.
Right.
And then the amp with no reverb.
Reverb, yeah.
But you're starting to buy surf records?
Yeah.
Who turned you on to surf?
You know, probably my friend.
Mark. I don't hear much surf in Deep Purple.
No, there is none, really. I mean, how I got into it early. I mean, probably my friend Marco Witzerman. It's he's 64 or 5 years old now. Kind of lived in that generation. He grew up when he was 14, 15, 16. That was top 40 music at that point to him. And we'd go surf together and hang out. He would turn me on to those sort of early Challengers, Dick Dale records and such like that. And, you know, being a hardcore surfer myself, I've been surfing since about 10 years the whole till present. Just found a connection with that, meaning, like, you know, I just, since I am a surfer and this is the history of the sport.
So he's turning you on to records?
Yeah, records.
So you bring these records to your bedroom, you start figuring out the
lyrics?
Yeah, sure,
you know, yeah, you're doing some Shantae, some Pipeline, you know. And
when did you get your, like... Well, it must have been a Fender first, right?
Yeah, the Fender Twin. The Fender Twin I got.
And what kind of guitar?
And at that time, I was still playing. I ended up getting an upgraded...
Because that import probably didn't have a whammy.
No, it didn't. You know,
you need a whammy for surf, right?
You did the neck thing, which was terrible, you know, for that. And I'm sure I probably ended up snapping the neck on that one. But, yeah, I ended up buying a Gretsch 6120 Chet Atkins model with the Bigsby on it.
Sure.
And that was like my first like real guitar. I bought it up in Hollywood somewhere. I want to say somewhere on Santa Monica Boulevard. I think I paid $400 with a case out the door. So it was a good value. Mm-hmm. You know, I played that guitar all the way up to this day. Matter of fact, that's why I recorded the whole record.
Okay.
The whole record.
Cool. When did you start playing with other people?
Well, see, the first band was in high school with Rob and Rich, and that was...
I think about San Pedro High School.
Yeah. And then we did, like, a talent show.
Merrill-Est,
yeah, at Merrill-Est High.
Oh, Merrill-Est.
Yeah, went to Leland Street, and then, let's see, then 7th Street, then Dana, and then I went to Pedro for a year, and then my parents moved up on the hill, so I finished up high school up there.
So you met some guys at school and started playing.
Right, yeah. So those guys were kind of into heavy metal, and you know, punk was just kind of starting. This was 78 or so for us. That was when I came on my radar at first.
Yeah. Right away, that's your first band.
Yeah,
first band. At school.
At school.
And you started playing parties.
Right, we did a talent show. I think we won $50. I think we went out and got a keg of beer and had another house party. And then that was pretty much it. I think we played maybe one other
time.
What
was it called?
It was called Tone Deaf.
Tone Deaf.
Yeah, the Tone Deaf and the Mutes, something like that, you know.
Mutes.
And, yeah, I think three performances total, and then we all kind of went our separate ways. But then, like, the first real band would be summer of 1980, and that was the Dial Tones, and that was, you know, the record there I gave Matt. And that was, that band lasted quite a while, I think, probably, you know, 8 or 10 years we played
together.
When
did you make that record?
That specific one there was, I think, with Piper Studios and Carson. I think Salvation Army.
Is that your first record?
No, there was one before that, okay. And I think that was Dynasty Records in Torrance.
The first time you recorded?
Yeah,
the studio?
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, we knew nothing of, you know, what a studio was. And, you know, we're like, hey, we need more reverb on this. And the engineers, oh, yeah, we'll add it later. You know, I want a heavier guitar sound. Yeah, we'll add it later. So, you know, the record comes down going, oh, it doesn't sound anything like what we sound like. You know, it's a little disappointed, really. So from that day forward, I don't listen to engineers. I plug and play the way I want to hear it, and then that's that, you know.
Pizzo?
Well, no, yeah, I had no trouble with Pizzo. I think he was an excellent engineer. It was real comfortable. And
They had it all pretty much scoped out when they did it. It was like, actually, they were the first band that came in and no phones. Just played live in the studio. No cans.
No cans.
So I had a speaker in there to communicate
with. I thought no leash, you know. Oh, yeah. Leashes in the studios. Actually, you can hear them. They'll make sounds that end up on your shit.
Yeah.
But it's all distracting. I'll tell you the most distracting, though, was Corbin J. Maskus, and he's got fucking all my children just blasting on it. Constantly.
Yeah,
like
distracting.
Tapes, right?
Yeah.
Like, so there's no commercials. I mean, it's just constant. All my children. It's like, whoa, man. Okay. But he's maybe pretty good parallel processor. So you learn, you lived and learned by the... What about this one here, the Piper one in Carson?
Yeah, this one here, yeah, this is like the second 45 we put out. I think it's a year or two later, 82 or 3. And at this point, we're kind of learning finally how to play and tune our instruments, because like I was telling Pete earlier, the early stuff, I mean, we really had no idea what we were doing. We didn't own a tuner.
You should give credit to the other Dial Tones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, another thing, too.
Well, got to use fucking names, probably.
Right.
There's just another, put out them thoughts.
Yeah. And like the Dial Tones.
Lives are going out.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
Name them.
Yeah.
So who's the old dudes in the Dial Tones?
Well, yeah, they're right. We got Bill Smith on guitar, and you got Max Wheatley on drums, Chuck Rios Christensen on bass guitar, and the first singer was John Conine. He was in the band for a year or two, and then he rang up a pretty good-sized bill here in San Pedro for certain items, and I believe he had to leave. He ran up to Yuma City or something like that up by Frisco, and he's never been back. Kind of lost contact with him, tried to reach him a few times, but heard he turned into some like sort of bass fisherman, you know. And that's the last I heard of him. Chuck ended up in San Clemente. Bill's still here in town. He's in South Shore.
Who took his place? You said he's the first singer.
Yeah, then the guitar player, Bill, he had stepped up and took over vocal deals.
I wanted you to say that.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah.
Credit, because you spent a bunch of years with these guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah, a lot of years, yeah.
And post-Dial Tone?
Yeah, see, after that...
Did Dial Tones do any tours?
No, no tours. Yeah. I think the furthest thing we did was we did this like little college circuit sort of thing. Like
in
going
California.
Down to California, like San Diego State. They had all these frats and stuff, and they had budgets. And they would pay us pretty good to go, you know, so we'd all hop in the car, drive down there, make a weekend out of it, you know, do the show, and then hang out and party with those guys, and then head back, San Diego, Santa Barbara, up to L.A., UCLA, and USC. That was about as far as we would drive, you know, and it was reasonable for us, because all of us had Monday through Friday jobs. We all worked, so we had to be back at work, you know, Monday morning.
Yeah. And how long did you do this?
God, you know, from 80 till about... Oh, 86, 88, and around there. And then, let's see, yeah, guys just started leaving the band. Bill and I continued on, and Max. And then, actually, Bill and I formed another band called Blind Dog Lost. And we did some recordings up there at Loyola Marymount with a guy named Brian Foxworthy.
Yeah,
I'm sure you remember him. Yeah.
Brother Matt, can't tell you, blue shit.
Yeah, exactly. And he was, what was his Brent. Job up there? He had keys to the studio. That's all I know. He was a teacher up there?
He was a master engineer. That guy was a wizard.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got a bunch of gold records and stuff throughout his music.
Cool guy, good Pedro guy.
I remember him.
Yeah, good Pedro guy. And so we would go up there, like, say, at midnight, and he would allow us to record up there as long as we bought the tape, the 2.5-inch Apex tape. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, we'd record from midnight till 4 or 5 in the morning on the weekend. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he said, we got to get out of here before the people start coming to school. And we recorded a couple records up there, and I tried to get the tapes are lost and the records are gone. I called Bill up to try to get a copy of them, but to no avail. So, but that was pretty cool.
You shared the experience.
Yeah, yeah. It was a cool band, a guy named Mike Jacone on drums, and he came from like a heavy metal sort of background, so he had a lot of energy to it. He was a really, really great drummer.
Who left the band?
The bass player and the singer eventually left. So then we got down to like basically a three-piece, and that's kind of where you really learn how to play, as you know, Mike. I mean, when you're in a three-piece situation, your chops really come up because there's nowhere to hide.
You know? A lot of mystery. No, that is. You know, we're at the end of the first hour. August 12, 2015 edition of the Watt Pedro Show. Special guest, Pete Patika. Pete Mays is kind of quiet mode.
Ask me some questions.
Dennis torture you?
Well, we're going to talk about how this new album. It's called Monsters.
Yeah, Monsters on Vacation.
So it's eponymous. Name of the band and the name of the record.
Yeah, no, the name of the band's Monsters on Vacation. No real title for it. The whole project was...
Eponymous usually means the name of the record is the name of the band.
I go with that.
Anyway,
yeah,
end of the first hour.
You went right over my head there, Mike.
August 12, 2015. It's the second hour. Watt from Pedro Show. Front of Cafe Nella in beautiful nighttime Cypress Park by the LA River and Dodger Stadium, and 20 something miles away from Pedro. But I just got to play with East Meets West, Mr. Tom Segal, a few days ago, Sunday. Today's Wednesday, so yeah, 4 days ago. We recorded for the first time. I think this is the second East Meets West gig, right?
Yeah.
Because I did get to be a guest aboard the Whiteout crew. So, did they do that once or twice?
Three times.
I did three times, okay. Yeah. So today was my fifth time playing with Tom Segal, improvised music. I guess you might even call it
a part of the free jazz movement. Then we actually did another one with Thurston Nelf and Willie Winant a number of years ago.
That's right, right, yeah, right, yeah, right. But yeah. I was a very minor player in
that. Well, that's okay.
The other one, I was like the third wheel,
right? Right, right.
So I was, yeah, Nels Klein. That was great, too. All of them I dug big time. But like I said, this thing, you know, I'm not into genre, music's music, but you could say that maybe this neighborhood is called free jazz, and I say that not because I need a name for a genre or something limiting or some kind of gulag terminology, but you're putting together a documentary talking about music, but kind of in this neighborhood.
Absolutely.
But you could tell more about it. So talk.
Yeah.
Talk about this. This piece you're going to work.
Yeah, I've been working on this documentary for a number of years now, entitled "Fire Music: History of the Free Jazz Revolution." What I've been trying to do is really document the architects of the movement, the originators who devised this radical sound, probably the most rad music of all time. And I've been devoting myself to interviewing and shooting live performance footage of as many of the OGs who are still on the scene today. And I've been doing it over a number of years, and it's timely in that I'm doing it now because six of my interview subjects have expired since shooting commenced, so it's now or never. And I'm actually in the middle of a Kickstarter campaign right now, but we can expand on that momentarily. But back to Mike.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, for people who don't know about this movement, give some background. Like, when did it start?
You know,
around.
Yeah, around. You know, people basically point to 1959 as a kind of pivotal time period. That's when Ornette Coleman emerged on the New York scene. He's actually from Fort Worth. He was actually in L.A. initially toiling with his contemporaries out here, John Carter, Horace Tapscott, and Bobby Bradford. Bobby Bradford's the only one left now from that crew who I interviewed. Yeah. Unbelievable guy. And then that's when Cecil Taylor really started doing his thing. So, you know, that was kind of the catalyst.
What would you say is one of the main tenets?
You know,
it kind of unifies the movement.
You know,
it's an improvisation.
Yeah, it's definitely improvisation. But you know, it's like I interviewed the renowned jazz critic Gary Giddens, and he was saying, you know, it's a large subject.
Yeah,
you can't be too reductionist about it. And it's variegated, and it changed from place to place, and it took root in places all over the world, and metamorphosed depending on the time and place, you know, and the people who were playing it.
I bet you a lot of people don't know that. I mean, they think of New York, maybe.
Yeah, well, New York is, you know,
but
New York.
But what other places in the world?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, definitely it was in New York. But, of course, okay, I already referenced the L.A. scene.
Right, right.
Very important movement. Did not get the media focus. Did not get the European attention. You know what that's like. They don't want to pay for you to go to Europe, you know. It was like just like that back in the day as well. There was a very significant scene in the Bay Area with Errol Sanders, Prince Lachey, Sonny Simmons. By the way, Eric Dolphy was also part of the LA scene. But Bobby, I told you this the other night, Mike, very interesting, is Eric was a straight-up bopper the whole time he was in LA. He didn't get weird until he made the scene in New York. So, you know, New York, you know, it's like our scene. It's like punk rock in New York, you know, and the scene out here. I don't know which happened when and what happened first, you know. Yeah, well, you know, that's the thing. I don't know who started first, you know. Was it the Runaways? Was it the Voidoids? Was it television? Was it New York Dolls? You know, it's the same thing in the free jazz movement. You had a lot of people doing the same thing at the same time. I don't know if necessarily one was the model for the other. I think they were all feeding each other just like we did back in the day, you know, like we do now, just like everyone does in music. It's all the one continuum, you know.
How did they connect, though? By actually playing with each other? You were telling me there was an East German scene. Who got to play with them guys?
The scene was an amazing scene, you know.
It was underground,
you had primarily this, well, you know, interestingly enough, it got so popular. You know, I interviewed Gunter Baby Summer, one of the greatest drummers. If you ever get a chance, anybody out there, go check him out. You know, he doesn't come out to the West Coast all that often. He was part of an amazing group called Synthesis. And they actually started, you know, in a depressed period of time in East German economic history, they started generating some serious profits. And the government took over, booked their tour, sent a Stasi agent with them on tour to make sure that they didn't defect or even integrate too much with the external world, you know, and the government kept most of the money. So that's a fascinating anecdotal aside.
But for sure, probably France, England.
For me, what I'm focusing on, what I think is the most vital scenes in Europe, was England, Germany, and Holland, you know. And, and just getting back to the American thing for a while, there was also the Midwestern scene, for whatever reason, you know, we'll never exactly know musicologically why, but it took hold in St. Louis with the black artist group, Oliver Lake and his contemporaries, and then the AACM in Chicago. And again, they were very obviously influenced by the New York scene, but they were coming out of new music. They brought in small percussion, and contemporary classical was definitely informing what it was they were doing. They started playing old horns, bass saxophones, enormous things. You know, they had a whole giant
and then out of the south,
instruments.
Out of the south was Sun Ra.
Well, Ra came from the South. Yeah, he's from Alabama. He was a conscientious objector during World War II. You don't meet too many of them. He migrated, like everybody else did, who was African American from that era in the 50s, to Chicago, you know. And coincidentally enough, he moved into the same building as Joseph Jarman. And that impacted his music. And he's another cat. Listen, Ra's music was not what we think of as Sun Ra until he moved to New York. You know, he got very weird.
Philadelphia.
Then what happens? Marshall Allen, who I interviewed, who I traveled to Philadelphia.
He's still touring.
Yeah, still touring, still playing like a motherfucker. Yeah. He, his father, he's a Southern dude. But his father just bought a place in Philly. His father died, and he inherited the building, and they moved in, and that's where they've been ever since.
Right,
you know,
right.
But Philly, of course, we were talking about the deep history of Philly with John Coltrane, Rashid Ali, McCoy Tyner. I mean, you know, once again, Bayard Lancaster, Dave Burrell, Dave Burrell, who I interviewed, Bayard Lancaster just passed. You know, Philadelphia had a major scene too.
Sure.
You know,
you were telling me Train liked to have Philly guys around him.
Yeah, that's what Rashid, my good friend Rashid Ali, who is no longer with us, said he liked to surround himself with Philly cats, you know.
And definitely, John Coltrane was moving in a free jazz way, right?
Yeah, we talked about that the other day. I mean, that's one of the most radical developments in contemporary musical history. John Coltrane was the leading exponent of jazz in his day. He was the biggest selling jazz artist of all time. And at the height of his fame, he basically aligned himself with these radical upstarts, these guys, you know, exploring polytonality and multi-directional drumming, and totally devoted himself to that music. And he was a godfather. He got Archie Shepp and Albert Eiler and Marion Brown major label deals. He was responsible for really bringing that music into the forefront, and you know, other people benefited as well. And yeah.
So the problem is, a lot of people don't know, and this the idea of this documentary is to get the word out.
Well, people don't know because there has been, it's not by accident. There has been a conspiracy to eradicate this important cultural development. You know, Wynton Marsalis and his cohorts, you know, have championed this revisionist trend.
Oh, yeah.
And they are disrespectful. He's always talking about paying homage to, you know, jazz ancestry, but he's completely irreverent toward his immediate predecessors, and he has basically tried to write them out of history. And you have young kids coming out of jazz studies on the collegiate level today, and they don't even know of this music's existence.
Yeah.
You know.
So how can people help you help get the word out?
Yeah. Well, I have a Kickstarter campaign. You can go to firemusic.org, and that has all the information there.
Firemusic.org. FIREMUSIC.ORG.
Yeah.
Go there, check out Tom Segal's Proj, who's the executive producers?
Thurston Moore and Nels Klein. You ever heard of them?
Very happening people. Yeah. And who would probably acknowledge much influence.
Absolutely. You know, that I think that music informs everything that they do, and not just musically, you know, as it does with us all. And if you don't know this music, you're deprived, man. You know, it will enrich your soul to let this music into your life. And remember, the music may be free, but it costs money to make a movie.
Tom, well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Course.
I want to thank you for this gig
of
and for the recording at Casa Hanzo Sunday.
Absolutely. Looking forward to hearing the results.
Absolutely.
All right, man.
Thanks, brother.
All right, brother. Thanks a lot.
I come from hell, job, job. I know you well, job, job. So pay the devil, job, job. I come from hell, job, job. I know you well, and I told them hell. So know you well, so pay the devil. Thank you.
Elvi.
Return of the Moon.
Scratch a ticket with a leg of a cricket and I got triple Jesus. Cast it in for Siamese twin at the family firing range. Once a veteran woke up beside another man's head, nobody noticed. I'm so excited the senators were fired. Don't tell me nothing's changed. Return to the moon. Just swirls around, comes down and buries.
Ronnie Rasmussen ran amok. Well, Doc Moonlight bought a new T-shirt from a riding strips. Amphetamines grow fast, hard bodies of a high stiff. 50 years ago, his daddy bought a mare back in Dodge City. And Wider's grandson now sells new cars in the Witch's Titty. Life on a high plane, borrowed on a pile of loans. I drove, Ronnie handed me pound selected phone. Outside Zip Club, we smoked and pissed. Inside Pack Rat, picked his face with bliss. His eyes rolled back in a close fret. Goop out the boot, the bip, bip, the bop from hip to hip to hop. Bip, the bop, swinging man on an astrological star. His nose inhaled, packed behind the bar. Candy wrapper, Cosmos, and Ben's a dream. Dragnet, luncheonette, make the scene. Play it straight, if fate says best. Really bad, has said a fair say. Shuffle on down, slide away from the mass. Wanna smizzle, just on the grisette. Oh, Rapid Robert Ronnie Rasmussen ran amok. Rapid Ronnie rides the moonlight high. Pack rat stop pills and played melodic. Drank an oxybiotic, made him neurotic. Jimmy Manny heard, beginning gonna steal Doc's thunder bird. Ronnie went alongside and found grace. Riding crossroads of the universe. Oh, Rapid Ronnie, Ronnie, Rasmussen ran amok. Rapid Robert Ronnie Rasmussen ran amok.
corazón. Qué bonita se sentía mi corazón con razón. Samoana preciosa calentando mi corazón. Samoana preciosa cantaba cantando mi corazón. Libre como el mar cuando brillamos en la pista, gozando de la noche, moviéndonos al disco, moviendo al compás de tu corazón palpitando, y sudor va cayendo de tus labios que besé. Libre como el mar cuando brillamos en la pista, gozando de la noche, moviéndonos al disco, moviendo al compás de tu corazón palpitando, y sudor va cayendo de tus labios que besé. Libre como el mar cuando brillamos en la pista, gozando de la noche, moviéndonos al disco, moviendo al compás de tu corazón palpitando, y sudor va cayendo de tus labios que besé.
Watt from Pedro Show. Start off the second hour. This is on vacation with Felicia, which roughly translates to El Hombre.
Police.
Police.
Cops.
El Hombre. Kesatsu. And then, we heard some spiel with Tom Segal. I got to record with Pete Nazich and Casa Hanzo Sunday. First time really gave the little China Hofner Beetle bass a work. I'm going to bring it tonight, too. Flats. I ain't played flat one in a long time.
The pointy trick. Shoes you got for that one, the pointy shoes, too?
No, that's for Cap Falco. That's coming in October. Pointy shoes and brown, dark brown suit.
Winkle pickers.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Winkle what about those one from Mexico? One,
these oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The pointy boots.
Tab.
The dance moves going with that.
And then Stifle Moon from White Album, Jim O'Rourke, William Winant. Man Man T-Ray, Mackie Burnett. Return to the Moon, political song for Dee Dee Bloom to sing with Crescendo from Elvi. I don't know who they are. I think they're Cincinnati people who moved to Portland, but they said some nice things about the Minutemen. Super Chunk, all fans of Matt, Overflows. Bloodshot Bill with Rapid Ronnie. La Samoa. Somebody from Samoa. In the Spanish.
Samoana.
No Samoans.
Samoana.
Yeah, that's how you would say it.
But that would be
the, Batman.
Yeah, but that would be the...
Spanish.
Yeah,
Spanish.
But that would be the feminine
context. Yeah, it's a lady.
Samoana.
La. Not L. Okay.
Yeah, no. Samoana.
Samoana. But it looks like Samoa with N-A. Okay, yeah. Enough of the language. Right. It's a music show. Mini Beast with Fresh Dust. Peter... there in Providence, another Pete related to these. And then finally, two Petes, Monster on Vacation, Engineer and Guitar Man, Needles and Pintails. What's that about?
Oh, I don't know, just kind of, we're doing this, this project, Monsters on Vacation, was basically a friend of mine named Steve Fuchs is putting together the surf movie called Stoked, and the first episode, I had a couple songs on it from my other band, The Riptides. He goes, hey, if you write some more songs, I'll put them on the movie. And so that's when I got up with, you know, Pete
so
here.
So Riptides happened after Dial Tones?
Yeah, yeah. The Riptides, after the breakup of the Dial Tones, yeah, that's kind of when
is
I got
Riptides,
to help.
Riptides, that was coming in at KXLU?
I think some of the Blind Dog Lost stuff was at KXLU. That's okay. What we recorded up there, and then we
and
saw
then
the
both those records are lost. They are.
Yeah,
they're
truly lost. Yeah. I don't know where they ended up. They're probably in a warehouse rotting away. Those tapes.
Well, maybe the compositions are in your head.
Yeah, okay. Definitely. Yeah, I can probably pull them out again. You know, and
but Needles and Pins.
Needles and Pins. Yeah, that was.
That was a big hit in the
60s. Right, that's kind of where I got, you know, lifted the title on that, and then using the term pintail as a type of surfboard tail shape, just to be, I guess, you know, make a pun of it and be funny. But, I guess the guy wanted more acoustic music for his surf movie, and so we kind of wrote that basically on the spot. I wrote that probably 3 or 4 days before going into his studio, Pete's studio, and recording it.
So some stuff was really old.
Yeah, some stuff was old and some stuff like the three songs, Policia.
Couple days before.
Policia was brand new. Needles and Pintails was new.
So from Riptides to Monsters on Vacation, what happened in between there?
Lazy Lance and the Longhorns.
Right.
Yeah.
So you were a side mouse.
Yeah.
Not your band.
Absolutely. Yeah, Lance and I were old friends from, I don't know, the fifth or sixth grade. And we actually lived in an apartment complex. I was in the front. He was in the back. And he was one of the guys that really turned me on to the blues. I knew nothing about blues music until he kind of introduced me to it. You know, whether
well,
it be...
Well, you were playing some blues in that surf without even knowing it. For sure with the Deep Purple.
Right.
We had Lance on the show, right?
Yeah. We used to work on the barges.
And I worked on the barges. Well, we worked on the barges together as well, there. Yeah.
All three of you.
Well, two guys on a barge. I didn't get the pleasure of working with Pete.
Oh,
but I worked a lot of
worked
lot
with Lance.
Yeah.
But then Lance worked with you.
Correct. Yeah.
He's the lucky Pierre.
Yeah.
Sock it, man. Okay. I think it's getting about to be that time, Brother Matt.
Cool. Very cool.
For you to bring forth
The Spin Cycle,
yes,
with collaborator Pete Patika.
Cool.
All right.
Plug it in.
Yeah. 'Cause I'm gonna love you, gonna show you I'm a man. Won't leave me standing here with stickers in my hand. You're a cash baby, you're a cash child. You're a cash throwing free and wild. When I wanna kiss you and I hold you tight, you let me know that you're a cash doll. Thank you.
Brother Matt. Brother Matt, what was behind what you did, what you just done?
That was all pure Pipotica inspiration. Right. Pipotica music. Thank you, Brother Matt. In many forms.
Pipotica playing with Pipotica, younger Pipotica.
Yeah, that's scary, huh?
Jason,
it's yeah, very cool.
Well, it's August 12, 2015, end of the second hour. Special guest, Pete Mays, Pipotica. Brother Matt, it's the whole time for hour three. August 12, 2015. Yeah, yeah. It's the third hour of the Juan Pedro Show.
We'll be right back. blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the ways of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful, as I would say. Good tidings I bring to you this day. Come on down and do appreciate as I would play. You don't matter what the world may have to say. Sound your God so do appreciate. Every nigga is a star out here. That every nigga is a star out here. So you keep quiet, yes. Make them know them place. Keep quiet, yes. Chill you. Make them know them place. Long time ago, I used to read about the strong man of old and called Samson. He was a dreadlocks man. Then I read about little David. He was a dreadlocks man. Cha-cha, 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 cha-cha. And who said John the Dread, them a jester? Who said John the Dread, them a jester? Say who said John the Dread? Say who said John the Dread? Say who said John the Dread, them a jester? So you keep quiet, yes, make them tell you. Keep quiet, yes, make them know them please. Every nigga is a star out there. And every nigga is a star out here. And every nigga, and every nigga, and every nigga is a star out here. And to your border, 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 son of a would say. Border, border, all right. Till your border, border, so knows how to play. Till your border, border, right on. Till your border, so knows how to say. Till your kick quiet, yes, let them know them say. That's a disgrace as I would say. Till your border.
You can't.
Nunca me olvidarías. Ah! I think it's fantastic and I think it's fabulous. The town is so wonderful and the city is so great. If everybody loves it and everyone said, go to Crawley for me. You know what they're going to do for Crawley Town Place. People will love to go to Crawley Town. The town is so perfect and everyone said, go to Crawley for me. And sunshine always something is good so sun. And to realize you can make it anyway, you have to go to town as everyone said, go to Crawley for me. It's a lovely sunny morning and for breakfast in the house, people have enjoyed some having for breakfast. If people want to go out and everyone said, go to Crawley for me, they will sitting for grass and having for picnic. Barbecue is great to be they having for your lunch. They will have to enjoy it and everyone says, go to Crawley for me. And sunshine always something is good so sun. And you realize you can make it anyway. You have to go to town as everyone said, go to Crawley for me.
Thank you.
Pedro show. Start off the third hour with Monsters on Vacation. What does that name mean?
Basically stole it from a calendar. You go to Hawaii for vacation, and I saw these little characters that were on a, like a 99-cent calendar. Then I had my son manipulate it into what you see here on the cover art. Did a great job.
The name of the band.
Oh, basically, you know, the way I came about it was, you know, having these guys I thought were fantastic players, you know, Dave and Mike, you know, someone refers to a great musician as a monster, and they're away from their band. Well, you're on vacation with me, and we're going to go do this little side project, you know, and I was really honored to play with those guys. I thought they were fantastic.
Yeah. And Pizza, what was it like recording? You said no cans, they just came in.
Oh, it was really good, because, I mean, you know, Mike and Dave playing the Flying Squad. So, I was really excited to...
We should say their full names.
Yeah, Mike Mandich and David Vitasich. And Tony Vitasich, he's Dave's cousin. He's,
sure,
he's a guitar player. And I'm, of course, I sing and I play the keys in that band. Anyway, so...
The both these bands, people share members, is what they're trying to say.
Yeah. And so it was interesting... You know.
So you were kind of familiar.
Oh yeah, very familiar with them. I knew what they sounded like, and I just never heard this.
So Vacation from the fucking Flying Squad.
Right. Yeah. There you go.
Everybody's on the docks too, right?
Yeah.
A little Vacation there too.
Yeah, three Slav guys from Pedro. Yeah. You know, trying to learn how to or try to figure out how to play like some sort of Latin flavor. That was pretty unique and unusual.
That's yeah, but you're in an environment.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that, you know,
be harder over there.
Yeah.
Pedro a little easier.
Right.
Close to the source. Okay. We had Moist Boys with Crisis and Vices after Floating Face Down. Floating Face Down.
Yeah,
kind of surfing technique?
No, actually, it's kind of the position you want to avoid at all costs. Yeah, you're going
big
down.
Pearl.
You're going down hard. And yeah, you're pearling your face down. Not a good thing.
Then we had Kick Boy Face from Prince Jazzbo. Passed away a couple years ago. I didn't know. That's where Claude Bessy got his name. He had a record, he had a song and a record called Kick Boy Face. Claude Bessy was the guy who did Slash Magazine. It was in our scene, the first, I don't know what you call it, fanzine, yeah. It was an essential fabric. And then Labor Camp with Unusual Business. Paul Rossler on the keyboards.
All right.
Poco Tiempo, Los Humberstones, these Chile guys I had on the show a couple months ago. Great cats. Can Heads from Finland with Guilty Bystander. And then Barbs with Bella Chow. Yeah, there's an old collection of Jewish music out of Rome. Italian klezmer music from way back, and these guys have been exploring that. New York people. And then go to Crawley for me, Daniel Wakeford out of Brighton, England. I'm going to be there next week. Other than that, a week from yesterday I leave. Practice for a week and then the tour. Yeah, first cuz tour. Utsu from Hobo Combo, that's Capitello Andrea. His tribute to Moondog. Back to the people taking on the music story. So, after this Blind Dog Lost.
I'll give you a quick heads up on that. I'm driving up 17th Street, and we've got the name of the band. There was a flyer on the post, and it said Blind Dog Lost. And I go, well, that looks pretty sympathetic and sad. I go, well, that'll fit our band pretty well.
17th, by the high school?
Yeah, right by the high school, yeah.
Well, across from the Science Building is where Georgie lived.
Yeah,
and
right.
That's where Reactionaries, and that shed in the back. Georgie stopped making surfboards, wanted to do drums, bought, what's it called? Happy Jack. Keith Moon.
Yeah, I knew.
Headphones and just.
I knew George from the beach. He surfed in
he made boards, and then he gave it all up for drums.
Right.
Now he's back surfing.
That's good. He was a good surfer and a real solid guy. Really
went
cool
to Hawaii
guy.
A couple times, living on the beach.
Yeah.
Coconuts, he told me, almost killed him. It's one of the reasons why I gave up surfing. But he also just fell in love with the drums.
Right on.
After those guys,
Then come a Riptides. Is that
Riptides? Yeah, that started around 2000.
And that's different people.
Yeah, different people. We got Bruce Banson. He was originally from Long Island, New York. Fantastic drummer. An older cat. He's like about 64, 65, but he really gets that feel. He really nails it. Plays in a traditional sort of style. And a fantastic drummer. Then we got Jim Lanford on bass guitar. And then Leonard Russo.
Surf drummer from Long Island.
Yeah, go figure.
He shows you it's not where you're from.
Right.
It's where you're at.
Right, exactly. Yeah, he nails it. And
who on the bass?
Jim Lanford on bass guitar. And he's fortunate enough for us to play bass because he's kind of a blues guitarist at heart. But he's a fantastic bass player as well. And Leonard Russo used to play in a band here in town called the Wingtips for a lot of years. And he broke away from that, or that band kind of dissolved, and he and I got together and started doing the surf thing.
Well, you've been doing the surf.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He joined you.
You're correct. 10-4,
that's
yeah.
Music.
10-4.
This is the last one we're going to play, Surfzilla.
Surfzilla.
You got something to say about that?
Oh, to see a reptilian monster coming up from the sea to, you know,
Risha.
To kill all the surfers and ruin
it's,
wreck your
Japanese
town.
It's Japanese for whale, and then mixed with gorilla. That's where they got that name.
I had no idea. That's awesome.
Well, that's why we had you on the show, so we could learn this.
You know, I appreciate it. I'm getting educated over here.
at me. I grew up so pretty. A bag of nerves, shirt and tie, a trillion brain. Today they smile. I got a job, it pays the thrills. Watch the telly and I'm over.
Watch for Pedro Show. Last music for this edition. Surfzilla, Monsters on Vacation. Did a great job, Pizzo.
Thank you.
And you with the loan of his
band. Had a great
band. Hey, well, thank you guys very much.
And then we had DNA with New New. Must have been the new song, right? Hmm. Remember the Germans had one called the Other Newest One, because there was two new songs. And, you know, of course. And then Theme from The Sweeney by Apple Shift 7, Back Paid for Losses and Damages, Stalin Kaufman, In Your Hole by Elmo and the Sticks, Tune Number 2-06 by OG, or maybe Og. And, Og was in the Bible, right? Some giant. Don't trust me on it. Dreamer by Pale Angels, and finally, Soft Liner by The Lemon Limes out of Oaktown. Been great to have you on the show, both Pete's.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Future plan.
Keep writing, recording, performing. I think we're going to plan to go into your studio over here, Pete, in the fall again. So that's the game plan right now.
You know, I asked everybody who comes on the show this. Somebody was asking you for advice about music.
Wow. Yeah, just... never give up, no matter how bad the gigs are or how bad the shows are. If there's two people there or 2,000, do it because you want to do it, because you want to be there. Just keep going. Don't stop.
That's good advice. I mean, what's the alternative to stop?
Right, yeah.
I hated that word when they said, alternative music.
Yeah. Alternative to what?
Yeah. You're either playing it or you're not.
Yeah. Right.
What a jive bum rush with the, what's that called? Semantics.
Yeah.
So, your advice is do it because you love it.
Do it because you love it. And
if you face some hardship, fuck it.
Just keep rolling, because one gig leads to another gig. Yeah. You know,
and if you love it, never stop doing it.
Right. Yeah. You know, as long as it's still fun and it's not about money, it ain't about, you know, this, that, or the other. But as long as you can keep playing and enjoy it. And I said, sometimes you play and you're playing to the waitresses, and other times there's a thousand
people.
Call
those character builders.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There you go.
Brother Matt, thank you.
Yeah.
You're always essential.
Cool. Nice having you
good
guys.
Good to see you again, Brother
very
Matt.
Good. Always.
Thanks for both you guys coming on the show. It's a big honor. Sure.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Very cool.
And on the Pedro show.
Can't fall.
It's August 12th, 2015 edition. I got to get up to Cypress Park now.
Oh.
With the East Meets West.
No, you're right. We
got the Chinese Hoffa. Hoffner Beetle Bass.
No walking bass.
No walking bass. No horn lines. Keep your powder dry.
Yeah.